This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. How often do you think about your soap? Well, if you answered, not much, maybe you should. You see, a lot of what passes for soap in stores is technically not soap, according to the FDA's definition. It's full of lab-created chemicals and detergents because, well, it's cheaper to make. Now, what if you could buy natural soap made from natural ingredients like tallow, palm oil, coconut oil, and scented with essential oils, and for just a little more than you'd pay for grocery store soap? Sterling soap is 100% natural, and with a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne, there's a product and a scent for just about everybody. Check them out for yourself at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
Hey, glad you could join us. You are just in time for a great story from over 110 years ago of a gentleman that suffered a personal tragedy young in life that most would find to be debilitating, but he overcame to become the top of the football world. Tim Brown brings us a story of an amazing player who overcame unbelievable obstacles to reach a pinnacle of the pigskin.
Tim, welcome back to the pig pen.
Hey, Darren. Look forward to chatting. And normally I start off with some kind of dad joke, but I just couldn't come up with one that really seemed fitting and appropriate here. So
yeah,
we're just going in bareback.
Okay, just gonna go into this thing. This title does bring up a memory though, which I'll share with you in a second. The title that you wrote of a recent tidbit is "Don't Handicap Eugene Gus Neely," and the memory that pops up to me is when I was a kid, there was a movie called Gus that I think Disney came out with about a donkey that was kicking field goals. That it was just a silly story, but I just remember that because the donkey's name was Gus.
Yes.
But has nothing to do with this story, I don't think, though.
Did you cry when you watched the movie? Or
no, I cried at Old Yeller, but not Gus. Because Gus was a bit of a jackass.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I had to get the dad joke in or somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, good. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, so what can you tell us about Ed Neely?
Yeah. So
Eugene Neely. I'm sorry.
Yeah. The cool thing about him is I think everybody loves, we're talking about Old Yeller, but everybody loves a story of an underdog, right? And so now normally it's because in football, it's because somebody's too short, too slow, or they came from some small school, or you know, whatever it may have been. Here and there have been guys who have some form of physical handicap, and yet they persevere and end up, you know, having, you know, some great success. So, and he's one of them. And so Gus Neely grew up in Texas. You know, somewhere I think right around Dallas, I'm blanking on the name of the town. It's like Cherokee, Texas, or something like that. But anyways, he lost his right hand in a farm accident when he was in high school, probably about his sophomore, junior year. But he ended up playing, he ended up playing football and baseball at the Terrell School in Dallas. That eventually merged. Now it's St. Mark's, you know, a couple schools came together. So it's still an ongoing, very, you know, prestigious, you know, school in the Dallas area. But so he plays there. And then he entered Dartmouth in 1915. And he right away got some national attention. So like newspapers are always looking, you know, still are, you know, but back then they were always looking for something to, some human interest story. And so there's a big deal made of him. He appeared in papers all over the place because they called him a one-armed, you know, football player. And even though he's on the freshman team, you know, couldn't play varsity at Dartmouth at the time, he was like, it was clear this kid was good and that he was going to make his mark at Dartmouth. And one of the other funny things was that, like, while he was getting attention, a lot of times the local newspaper, they kind of add to the syndicated article and they say, well, you know, they don't know, you know, because it was claimed that he was the only one-armed football player in the country. But then they say, oh, what about so-and-so over at, you know, Watch Too Normal? And, you know, so anyways, it raised a bunch of different instances of, you know, kids playing who had some form of handicap. But anyways, he ends up as a sophomore. He starts. And one of the cool things is against West Virginia, he managed to intercept a pass and block a punt in the same game. So, you know, not bad if, you know, if he's doing it with one hand. As a junior, he ended up being named All-American by one writer. It was like the International News Syndicate, which was a big, you know, syndicate at the time. And their lead football writer considered him to be an All-American. And, you know, for sure, he was really well-regarded, really solid football player. Unfortunately for him, his senior season was 1918. So World War I's going on. And most colleges were effectively taken over by the U.S. Army. And they had the Student Army Training Corps. So, and a lot of schools didn't have varsity sports. They had SATC sports. And since he was missing his right hand, he couldn't be in the Army. He couldn't participate on the SATC team. But he ended up helping coach at Camp Dix in New Jersey, you know, that season. Then he went, you know, ends up leaving, you know, Dartmouth, and he coached his high school, you know, Terrell School for Boys, coached an undefeated season in 1919. He ends up a couple years later coaching Austin College, you know, in the Dallas area. And, but that was the only other year that I could find that he coached. So, you know, it's one of those things where each year he got publicity largely because of, you know, having lost his hand. And yet, you know, he was definitely a really formidable football player. You know, and they, you know, and just if anybody names you an All-American, then you're doing pretty well. So, and he was a big guy, you know, he's like 195 pounds, which is, you know, pretty good sized kid at that time for a guard. Mm-hmm. So, heck of a player, and ends up, you know, he had a successful career in oil and securities businesses and things like that. And so, you know, kind of, it's just one of those guys where you just kind of go, good for him, you know.
Yeah, I mean, just sit there and think about how hard it would be to pick off a pass with only one hand. You know, that had to be extraordinary that he was able to do that. It's hard enough for guys to get interceptions with two hands.
As a guard, so he's playing both ways, right? Mm-hmm. As an offensive guard, back then you couldn't use your hands. You know, you could only be in touch with the opponent with one hand at a time, you know, and like one arm at a time, I should say. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it probably wasn't as difficult, but, you know, when you're trying to, you know, when you're rushing or you, as a defensive lineman, you know, then it's a different deal. So, I mean, that had to be more difficult, but apparently, you know, he wore like, you know, the images show, he wore like a boxing glove sort of thing on his hand. So it was padded and everything. But, you know, anyways, still, I just think it's just a fabulous story. You know, here's this guy that, you know, he could have, you know, avoided a sport like football, but boom, he's in there, you know. Heck of an athlete.
There's been even some modern times. We just had a linebacker not too long ago, I think played for Seattle, that the name escapes me. I think there was two brothers and one of them was missing a hand. Yeah. And of course, the pitcher.
You're from Miami. Baseball.
I
think it played at Miami in college.
Yeah, I think you're right. Their name escapes me right now. Yeah. And then we had that a Major League Baseball pitcher probably about 30 years ago that had some success with having one hand and would change the glove off of his pitching hand. And I thought that was always amazing.
Jim something or other. He played for Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a kid in my, you know, my neighborhood growing up. He did the same thing. He was like pitcher in softball, you know, but he'd pitch, and that was, I believe it, we played, you know, slow pitch. Or you had to have some arc, not the beer league, you know, mm-hmm. high loop, but, so you had to have some arc on the pitch, but he'd pitch, and then he had this, and he, you know, had this move that he could switch it around, get his glove on the other hand. And, you know, I mean, he fielded ground balls, like basically like any other kid. He was a good athlete and stuff. So it just, he just dealt with it, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing what these guys can do with not having everything that most other players do have.
Yeah.
So very, very cool. So, I mean, this is another instance where you have a great story that you researched and you tell us about somebody that we probably would have never heard of unless you brought it to light. And you do this in your tidbits quite often. You go through, you know, turn over every rock and stone and find these stories. And I'm amazed by them all the time. And maybe you could share with people where they too can take in some of your tidbits.
Yeah. You know, easiest thing is just go to footballarchaeology.com. You can subscribe, and it's a Thumbstack site. So you just enter your email address. And then every time that I publish a new story, you'll get one, but or you'll get an email with the story in the email. You can follow, in which case it'll, you know, it'll appear on the app whenever you're on the app. And then, you know, the other thing is just, I just encourage people to bookmark it and feel free if they're like, when did this happen? Or when, you know, just some old football thing, you know, you can Google it obviously, but you know, a lot of times, if you just go to my site, enter the keywords, you know, there's a decent chance I've got something written on it, but give it a shot.
Yeah. And doing it that way, you know, you're getting facts, and it's not some AI thing that's making up something or putting together something that doesn't belong to the facts. So you know, you're getting the real deal with Tim's work. So I highly encourage that.
I mean, I use AI to search for stuff, but I trust but verify. I mean, I go back to the original sources and all that kind of stuff. So anyways.
Right. All right, Tim. Well, we really appreciate you joining us here, and I would love to talk to you again next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.